So I'm here to talk about 6 and 7 of this first half. Right? Now, I had heard a lot of things when I was new. In my first year, listening to people's ideas of what 6 and 7's about. One of the strangest things I heard somebody says is 6 and 7 is the forgotten steps. Right? Or the other thing you hear a lot is, well, there's not much in 6 and 7, it's only 2 paragraphs, and half of it's just a prayer. Right? And so it's easy to kind of like brush over it. You know, and the other thing is, one of the places that I've come up with a lot of resistance is because I don't make a list of character defects. Right? Because a lot of people will insist that we're supposed to be making a list of these character defects. And we're going to talk a little bit about why I find that that's not only hard to really see what is supposed to be on that list, but also the book never says we made a list of character defects. Right? So I'd like to start step 6 from the bottom of page 75, where it talks about returning home. We find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. I'm going to back up just a little bit, because one of the things that I want to say is there's some really good instructions here for the fifth step when you're working with people. If you know what you're supposed to see in the sixth step, it's helpful to discuss some of that stuff while you're in the middle of the fifth step. Right? It's talking about seeing the things that we find objectionable about ourselves. Right? Seeing where the things that we're not willing to turn to God for help with. Right? So, understanding the sixth step, I think, is important to effectively listen to a fifth step. Actually, in the fifth step, it talks about that's important to find someone that can understand what you're trying to do. Keep in mind that the book went out originally to people that didn't have AA meetings around them. So it was a little harder for them to find people that understood what they were trying to do and how they were doing it. I think now we can benefit, though, because we have people all around us that have a lot of experience with this, that if they understand where you're going, can help you help walk you through that while you're fifth-stepping. Right? So it talks about taking the book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first 5 proposals. Right? They're talking about reading the first 5 steps. Reminding us here that we're building an arch through which we'll walk free men at last. And it asks us to look at if our work is solid so far. Right? So one of the things that I do with the sixth step is walk them through the first 5 proposals. Right? We talk about the idea that, do you find the idea that you lose control over alcohol or drugs objectionable in your life today? And I have to see that if I'm clear on my first step, then it has to be an easy question. One of the things that I have to be clear on is, what do I need an act of God in my life when it comes to alcohol and drugs to save me? And then in step 2, it talks about, we look at step 2 and we agnostics, and we look at our agnosticism. Right? How I've doubted the existence that there's a power greater than myself. And the result of that was, walked around my life like I was the only power in my life. Do I find that that's objectionable today in my life? To the idea that there is no other power that's going to work in my life except me, and that I'm going to have to just work real hard and force what I want out of this world. Right? Do I find that objectionable today? Right? Hopefully I was clear enough from what the work I've done that I see that I want something more than what I've had. And then with the third step, gives the first requirement that that I have to be clear that self-will fails me. Right? And if I'm clear that self-will has failed me, and I honestly want more in my life than what I've had up to this point, and see through the second half of step three how I've played God in my life. Right? And if I didn't see it in step three, hopefully I certainly saw it in step four when it gives me this blueprint or this script, if you like, the script of self-will. Right? And all these little scenes in my play. Right? Each page is like a scene in my little play. Look at it from a six-step perspective and look back through the fourth step and see, ask myself, did me playing God work? Right? So, when we get to the fourth step, what I usually do is I send them home then to do that by themselves. And I ask them to go back through each page and look at each person and ask the things that it talks about for step six. It talks about if we emphasize willingness as being indispensable, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we've admitted are objectionable? So I have them review each inventory and look at, can you see the part of that interaction, that behavior that you find objectionable? Right? And it says, are we now ready to let God remove these things? Can he now take them all, every one? If I still cling to something I will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. So am I clinging to behavior or resentments or some part of the inventory that I saw about myself that I'm not willing to some kind of behavior I'm not willing to stop doing? Remember in the beginning of the fourth step, we talked about the value of hanging on to resentments. Right? And resentments will separate you faster than anything from the sunlight of the Spirit. Now, if you doubt that, just remember I said that next time you get pissed off at someone. Right? It just kind of puts me right into self, right? And a spiritual way of life doesn't make room for that. Talks about are the stones properly in place? Remember the cornerstone, the keystone, right? The foundation in the first step, the cornerstone in the second step of the willingness to believe, and the keystone in the third step. Remember, it talked about building this arch through which we'll walk to freedom, which is, I consider this arch, a keystone is the center stone in an arch. And I envision this arch on top of a doorway. And when we walk through this door, right, and the other side of that door is this vision, this concept of a new way of life. And that vision is a way of life that's understanding that if I don't trust that there's a power that will work in my life, nothing's going to change for me. Talks about, have we tried to make mortar without sand? Cement by itself isn't as strong as when you mix sand with it. Right, so what you see a lot in the program, you got those people that latch on to AA meetings. They use AA meetings like a lifeboat, right? Can never get out of the boat, right? Otherwise they're in trouble. You know, can't even go to another town without lining up a meeting in advance. There's the people that I know that are just steps, work out of the book and don't go to any social meetings. Right? I think that there's this big picture here. There has to be some kind of balance. Alcoholics Anonymous is the fellowship. Right? It is the 12-step process outlined in the book. And it is being at a place where I could work with others. You know, it's not just about one of these things. And I think it's important to understand that from the beginning, that this is not just about me getting what I can get out of the 12-step process and then going off and work on my relationships and getting the money back. And I have to see that this is about a bigger commitment than just what this thing can do for me. And you see many examples of it. You turn the spiritual path process into a selfish process. You know, bragging about how many hours you sit in meditation. Right? I used to be able to do that when I didn't have a job, but and I spent a lot of time trying to be one of those people, because that's the way a lot of people around me were. That's the way that they were, you know. But it's, you know, not that meditation is bad. Don't get me wrong. I actually do 16 hours of meditation a day. I do. The other 8 hours I'm sleeping. See, it depends on your definition of meditation, right? If I'm practicing bringing God into my life all through the day, right, then that is a meditation, and that is my practice. But here, right, I'm not going to be able to be anywhere near that if I don't understand why I need it and to what degree I need it. Right. I have to understand the difference between my character defects and the nature of my defects. I've gone through inventories where people have read a lot of fifth steps, and some people listening to my fifth steps have written down little notes for me and the character defects they see in me. Right. From my reading my fourth step. And you'll see things like controlling. I'm jealous. I'm, you know, these are the things that everybody can see. And after writing inventory, the way it's outlined in the Big Book and how I have it laid out in the Big Book Awakening, what you'll see is that my defective character and all of those things that you could write out here as my defective character. With the things that you've written in your self-seeking and selfishness, right? These are the selfish things that I do to you, or I've done to them, right? And this is my selfish thinking that I had while I was doing it. They saw what I did. You saw what you did, right? They know what I was thinking some of the times. I know what I was thinking, right? Those are the character defects that you usually see on those lists. Right? But in the fifth step, it talks about two things. On the very first paragraph in the fifth step, on page 72 in the first paragraph, it talks about seeing my character defects, but it also talks about the nature of those defects. What's the difference between the defects of my character and the nature of my defects? And I compared it to my alcoholism, and it's like I could look at my alcoholic problem as how much I drank and the stuff that happened around how much I drank and how I, and you know, the and trashing a marriage and just the way I was living. I knew I lost control when I start to drink. I just didn't know that every time I drink I'd lose control. I always had the idea that I had an element of control. And I was in the delusion for a long time that I had control until there was such a big problem there was no more delusion. And I started to get in touch with the nature of my problem. And that is, there's a level of insanity inside of me that I can't do anything about. Right? That I have a spiritual malady that manifests in the unmanageability we look on in page 52, which is conducive to the obsessions to drink. And those obsessions take me to the drink. It'll take an addict to drugs. It'll take a gambler to gambling. It'll, you know, so the spiritual malady take me to the obsession that takes me to the physical lack of control. And that is the nature of my problem. So when you use that kind of description here with the defects, my defective behavior or the defect in my character is the things out here that you'd list. But underneath those is the things that we looked at in the delusions and the fears. Right? Because the fears drive the delusions, that result in the thinking that manifested in the actions, selfish actions we took. I can work on the selfish actions. I could say I'm not going to talk bad about you to other people behind your back. Right? But maybe I could talk about somebody else behind their back instead. Starts to look like Joe used to use the analogy of I haven't seen them in years. They probably don't even have them anymore. But those, when you go to an arcade, those mole games where the mole would pop its head out of the hole and you have to hit it over the head, and then another one pops up over here. That's kind of like me working on my character defects. Because while I'm focusing on this character defect and I'm not going to do this, I'm pissing people off over here, right? Right? Because at the root of that is something that I cannot work on. You know, on page 62, in the first paragraph, it talks about selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of my trouble, and how it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. That's what I'm talking about here, right? And I see that. That gets proven in the fourth column. My fear driving the delusions that result in the thinking that end up in the actions, selfish actions that I take. I cannot work on my delusions. Right? Does that make sense? I cannot work on my delusions. I cannot work on my fears. And fears don't come from outside of me. I saw from my fear inventory. My fears wasn't about them. My fears are something I manufacture deep down inside. Fear comes from the idea that self-reliance will fail me. Right? And I have to see that. It's that I manufacture fears. And from those fears come those delusions, and I can't do anything about them myself. I could make those lists of character defects, and all I'd get was lists of things that I can try and work on, but unless I am clear, 100% clear, that there's things about those things, those are just manifestations of a real problem. But I cannot do anything about my fears and my delusions on my own. I have to have God's help. And that's what it's trying to lead me towards, right? This whole process has been about getting me to the place where I realize that I need a power greater than myself. You know, I had this tree outside my balcony years ago. And every time it grew up, it would block my view. So I'd start cutting off leaves. Right? But naturally, the view wasn't quite good enough, so I was on the second floor, and I'd just start hacking off branches. So here's this big tree, and this had this flat top. And every year, those branches would keep growing back up. You know, and I kept trying to trim down those branches and trim it lower and lower and lower so I'd get keep more and more of a view. And every year, the branches would just keep coming back up. Right? Working on my character defect is kind of like that. But finally, the owner of that building took the tree out. I said, that was the solution, to get down to the roots. But the trouble is, for some reason, I want to hang on to those roots. Because there's a part of me deep down inside that just doesn't seem to get it. Right? And I have to have God's help. It's about understanding how badly I need God to move beyond where I am. Right? I have fears in me. You know, the fears that stop you from writing the book. Not just the spiders and snakes and some of the fears that people write on their inventory. Fears that block you from painting that picture or starting that new job or getting out of the old job, or fears that stop you from getting out of that old relationship or into the new one. Right? I can't do anything about those myself. Those are part of the root of my problems. Those are part of the nature of my defects. Right? And I have to be really clear on that, because, you know, the seventh step starts off with a few words, but they're important words. Some people say the seventh step is just the prayer, right? But I can give this talk on the sixth step, and I can give the same talk on the seventh step, because it starts off with when ready. Right? When ready. Because I have to understand what when ready mean. Right? When ready means to me that I am completely clear that I cannot do anything about the root of my trouble. Right? The nature of my defects that manifest in the bad behavior or the bad thinking that comes out of me, cannot do anything about it. And this commitment that to a relationship with a power that I might not understand yet. Right? We're only halfway through the 12 steps, remember. There's more to come. Right? So, if anything, at this point I should realize that I might not 100% rely that there's a God out there that's going to change all this or save me from all this. But hopefully I've seen enough about myself to know that that nothing's going to change relying on everything I've relied on in the past. Right? It's like I'm in a burning building. Right? And the window's open and there's firemen down there saying, jump, jump, we'll catch you. Right? And the fires, I feel the heat behind me and it's like, I can't go back. I can't go back, because going back means I'm back into all this stuff I've seen up to this point. And there's this leap of faith that I have to take. This leap of faith that if I jump, there'll be something there that's going to catch me. Okay. So the idea here is it's like a relationship. Right? If you have a relationship with a person and you ignore that relationship, how good is that relationship going to be? Not very good, right? And I see that my relationship with God has been like that. I've completely ignored the possibility that there was a power that would work in my life. And so there's a line I draw through 6 and 7. Straight down the middle of 6 and 7. 6 is bringing everything I've seen from the first 5 steps and all of the defects that I'm aware of now in 6 to this point. And when I can honestly say I'm ready to turn to this power, then I say the 7-step prayer. And only then. Right? And it's not about being It's not about me working on my defects, and it's not about being stuck in 6 because I've still got character defects. Would you say the way you drank was a defective part of you? Right? Or the way you use drugs, was that defective part of your nature? Has God removed your alcoholism, or has He just removed the problem? So who am I to pick and choose which things I'm supposed to work on in my life? God removed the problem of my alcoholism, but not the alcoholism. And my biggest defect has turned into one of my biggest assets to God and the people around me. Because God can use that defective character in me to help others. Right? So, to sit and stand in judgment of myself based on my behavior and what I do, it could be a hard place to, it could be a hard place to operate from, right? But a lot of people do that, right? When I look at, myself and what I want and what I don't have, I can get into that place. Right? What I wished I was. Am I who God would have me be? That everything in his has fallen into place just how it has to be.